Yeah. Speaking of wild rovers, I want to welcome a friend of ours for decade after decade, Neil O'Dowd, founder and publisher of Irish Voice newspaper, Irish American magazine, Irish Central, and author of so many books. But this, your book, first of all, you're welcome, Neil.
Thank you, Adrian. You've called me a lot of things, but a wild rover is the first time.
Yeah, well, I've heard you called a lot worse, God knows. And myself, too,
hey,
actually.
That's the case.
Neil, President's Day, and appropriate indeed that we should have you here, to speak of, you know, of President Lincoln and your bestseller book. You know, it's the untold story of how the Irish helped Abraham Lincoln save the Union. That's a mouthful, but just give us a synopsis, if you will.
Well, what I'm doing, Edwin, actually, is launching the Irish and George Washington, which is for President's Day. I'm doing it at the George Washington Association in New Jersey, which is the oldest George Washington Association in America, and I'm looking forward very much because the Lincoln book, as you said, was very successful. And what I've been trying to do is fill in the truth of the stories, you know, the Irish in the Civil War, or the Irish in the Revolution. Many of them never wrote down anything because basically they were illiterate when they came here, many of them, and there's tremendous amounts of history about them that has never been written or never been talked about. So the Lincoln book in particular was very successful, and I think the Washington book will surprise a lot of people too in terms of the close connections.
Yeah. You know, it is, again, when we think of, you know, the most prominent U.S. presidents to historians anyway, Washington, George Washington, yes, first president, and indeed, as we might expect, rates very highly as we look back on the U.S. presidents. And also, the Irish connections, and we might unfortunately think that when we think of presidents of the U.S. with Irish connections, sure, God, they must all have been Catholic. Straighten that one out for us.
No, in fact, you know, the fact is that there were 250,000 Scots-Irish in America at the time of the American Revolution. There was about 100,000 Catholic Irish who had come in as indentured servants. So the Scots-Irish, interesting story about them, Adrian, is that they were very heavily affected by the penal laws. We know the penal laws affected Catholics, obviously. But the Anglican Church, which was trying to take over Ireland at the time and smash all resistance, also disliked intensely the Presbyterians because many of them were what we call dissenters, people who were not happy with the way things were running. And so a lot of them left Ireland for the same reason that Catholics left Ireland, because the penal laws meant that they could not marry. If they married another Presbyterian, that wedding would not be recognized. If they tried to get a job, they would get in line. The job would first be offered to the Anglican. So, I mean, there's layers of history about the Scots-Irish and about the Irish Catholics around the time of the Revolution, much of which I had never read before, in terms of just this massive impact that they had on the foundation of this country. And in fact, Washington's two chief aides were both from Ireland. One was called Moylan, Stephen Moylan, and the other was called Thomas Fitzgerald. And there's a famous scene where Washington is crossing the Delaware, as we all know about. But the only eyewitness account that has lasted of that is Thomas Fitzgerald from Wicklow, who was traveling with Washington as his chief aide. And, you know, became very close to him. It's just one example of a person who has been written out of history, but has a very noble and incredible part to play in the American Revolution.
I guess, Neil O'Dowd, I want to ask you about, you know, it's huge news today, but at the rate things are developing with, as we approach the brink of war, which everybody assumes could, you know, we could enter that, according to President Biden anyway, in the matter of you know, a few days. The Irish story, and in particular the now for sure upcoming visit of President Joe Biden to Ireland and to England, that's indeed, hopefully that won't get overshadowed by the threat of, again, of war. But we do need, first of all, this is not a parade, it's a state visit. And how do you see the agenda as the president now heads for Ireland and England in June?
You know, the interesting thing in terms of the Irish agenda, I know the man has a lot on his plate, but you know, there's some very, very important things happening in Northern Ireland. There's the Northern Ireland elections in May. There's a continuation of the Brexit situation, which could be very serious once that executive comes into power as to how that will be resolved. And the one thing that we haven't got from the Biden administration is the U.S. Special Envoy. Now, every president, including Trump, has sent a special envoy since George Mitchell was sent over in 1994 by Bill Clinton. And it played huge roles, as you know, like George Mitchell, obviously, of all people. But there are many other very fine peace envoys, who, Richard Haass, for instance, who played a huge role in bringing together the peace agreement and holding it together after Good Friday. I've never had a satisfactory explanation from people in the Biden administration as to why they haven't gone ahead and done the same thing, because the presence of a U.S. envoy would be very, very important, because in terms of the unionists and in terms of the nationalists, the British are basically running the show, making the decisions. And I know that Biden is very strong on Brexit, but he's got a lot of stuff on his plate, as you point out, with Ukraine. And I think I really do think a special envoy would make a big difference.
And we're not short of candidates.
No. In fact, I personally think someone like Bruce Morrison would be amazing in the job. He's got so much experience dealing with Irish America and Northern Ireland, and is very, very much sure-footed on the issue.
Yeah.
Someone of that caliber, I don't think you'd have a problem getting somebody of great caliber. And in fairness, Trump had a very, very good envoy go over. I can't remember his name. He's from South Carolina, Mick Mulvaney.
Yeah.
He was actually very good. And I think there's a lesson there for the Biden administration that doing that would be very helpful with the Irish American population, who still consider peace in Ireland to be very much part of the American agenda and very important for the future.
Right, and you know, among the names, the candidates there, let's also add Brian O'Dwyer. But I want to move to the story that is finally coming to a head, and God knows. We are among, I'd say, overall, the few who are even aware of the significance and the story of the American Irish Historical Society here in New York. And the proposed sale of the iconic building. You know, we said, oh my God, that's awful, but sure, that would never happen. Let's not be, you know, that confident, because there is huge movement at the moment to see that one through. Give us your opinion on, first of all, how the hell this could come up in the first place.
It's a very serious situation. I think people look around at the Irish-American community right now, and the Great Hunger Museum in Connecticut is in trouble. The American-Irish Historical Society is in trouble. These are two huge aspects of Irish-American identity, the famine and the amazing building on Fifth Avenue, which is the finest Irish building in America in terms of containing Irish artifacts. There's 15,000 books, volumes of stuff that's absolutely invaluable stored there. And there's been problems for a long time, which have now come out into the open, about the governance of the American Irish Historical Society. And we were the first to break the news this week that three very prominent board members, had resigned from the board because of what seemed like an absolutely crazy, the only way I can put it, move the American Irish Historical Society upstate to Cooperstown. And for what reason or why, nobody could quite figure out. We know that the board have been trying to sell the building. We know that there's a market value, the latest market value is about $44 million. This is an incredibly important moment in Irish-American history, because if we lose the American Irish Historical Society in New York, we lose the ability to pass on to the next generation some of the fabulous aspects of that building and the story behind it, and really the reason why the Irish succeeded in New York, in America. So there's a huge amount of furore, and has been for many years, about the management of the board of the American Irish. The resignations obviously made it clear that there are huge problems. And then the appointment of a guy who has no ties at all that I can see to the Irish-American community as the new president general all leads you to the conclusion that there's a major crisis. And the worst of all situations would be that the American Irish Society would sell the building on Fifth Avenue and move to some location where nobody could ever visit. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that seems to be one of the options that's being pursued.
You know, to say and to look on the history of the American Irish Historical Museum here, to say that it is and has been an elitist organization is not too much of an exaggeration. It has not been a very friendly place. You know, it's not the kind of place that you'd show up, at the door in your Wellingtons, you know. Yeah, and a fag hanging out of your mouth. It is.
That's what you would probably, but nobody else.
I don't even own Willys anymore. But it is, it's been a dynasty for, 40-plus years. And somehow, membership has, been open if you looked the part, or, again, if you look like you have done well, and the support for the American Irish Historical Society has always been at the highest level, and of course they can brag, that they've had amazing guests, including, and paid tribute to, President Ronald Reagan, for instance, and so many high-profile, people of the year. And that kind of came to a crashing halt not all due to the pandemic, but rather the reality that, wait a minute, who's making the decisions here? Who? Where is the accountability? Where, you know, what's happening? Isn't that pretty much, an accurate reflection on, you know, on what amounted to be, you know, one family and some sense of entitlement, which is hardly, you know, the mission and the mission statement of the American Irish Historical Society?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Cahill family have been in charge since the 1960s. I think they mix up the role of ownership and caretakership. They're caretakers of the most beautiful and historic Irish building in America. But sometimes they act, unfortunately, like they're the owners, and I think that's part of the problem. But I do think that the community did get a wake-up call last year when this story first broke about the attempted sale of the American Irish. And there's been a lot of people who have joined in. There was a petition of 40,000 people signing, saying, you know, this cannot happen. This has to be looked at. And it brought in the Attorney General, who is a very formidable figure, Letitia James. And she's conducting a pretty major investigation, from everything I hear, of the nuts and bolts, everything about what's going on within the society. And she has a tremendous amount of power, Adrian.
Yeah.
She can replace the board if that's what she finds, if there's clear evidence of things not being done right. I'm not saying there is, but I'm just saying that it's very much her move rather than any other, the Cahill family or anyone else's move in terms of what happens next.
When we're at the stage where the Attorney General is issuing subpoenas, that serious stuff, and that's going to change the ball game completely, because for the last couple of years we've been quite comfortable in, you know, wishful thinking that this whole thing will go away and you know, everything will be fine again. We were comfortable also in recognizing that the Ireland's Great Hunger Museum at Quinnipiac University, that was so well established under the leadership of former President John Leahy, who thought that we'd get up one morning and with under the new administration and new president, the doors are closed and the lights are out. You want to talk about a wake-up call? That's about it.
You want to talk about a community that's about to lose two of its most valuable entities at the same time, practically. And you talk about a community that has to stand up, both in Connecticut and in New York, and say, no, this is not going to happen. This is our history, our culture. Just imagine if this was a Jewish-American issue and it was about the Holocaust or about anything to do with their history, how hard they would fight and how correct they would be to fight. And we need that kind of spirit in the Irish-American community.
Yeah.
That will say, this belongs to Irish-America. It belongs to the people who came over here on the boats, who built the cities, who moved up in life, who created a whole dimension of America called Irish America. You can't just take that and close it down or put it in the middle of nowhere upstate New York. It's not good enough, and it's something that I feel strongly that the community has to start to rally and say, you know, what is going on is not right. And I think we have got to the point where the Attorney General is certainly investigating very thoroughly. As you said, she's been issuing subpoenas. And I don't know what the outcome will be, but I think there's a reasonable chance that we will see the right thing being done once that report is made.
Again, just doubling back to, you know, what I said about a comfort level and saying that's ridiculous. You know, that's warped. Nothing like this could happen. You know, a bit closer to home for some of us, especially those from Attimas in County Mayo, we came under severe threat of actually having the Irish Hunger Memorial at Battery Park City smothered, you know, by, you know, a last-ditch effort, you know, by Governor Cuomo on his way out the door when things got hot, say, oh, yeah, why don't we throw a, or build a memorial to the essential workers. That sounds like a good one. Well, where would you do that? Oh, well, there's plenty of room there around the Irish Hunger Memorial. And you and myself and a lot of people simply said, okay, no, this isn't going to happen. But it could have. You know, you have a governor,
yeah,
and the governor says...
That was your work, primarily, to build that place, to get that done. And I think you did an amazing job. And I think you did an amazing job defending it when the time came. And that's the kind of spirit we have to have with the other institutions, that it's not good enough to just sit back and say, well, we have our famine museum.
Yeah.
We have our American-Irish, and it'll always be that way. No, it won't. And when you look at the number of people who sat by on that famine thing and said that it'll never happen, Cuomo wouldn't be so stupid as to put up a competing museum or memorial.
Yeah.
You know what? He would have done it if he could.
He would have. And unfortunately, he had the power to do it, you know.
Yeah.
It's governor. It's state property. If he wanted to, but however, that's fortunately in the past, and now with our Irish governor in Cathy Hochul, that's no longer an issue. But sometimes we have to act, you know.
Yeah.
We have to not wait until, you know, the horse has gone to close the gate. And maybe I've always maintained that, you know, a lack of action may be interpreted as, you know, lackadaisical, sure, they won't care anyway. And that's not part of our identity, our Irish identity.
But Adrian, you know what was obvious in both cases, in three cases, with your famine memorial, with the Quinnipiac, and with American Irish, the people running those institutions and things, they never came to the Irish community and said, look, we need to do something here, or we need to sit down with you guys and decide. There was no consultation, just a complete arrogance, close down the museum, sell the American Irish, it's nobody's business but ours.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's everybody's business. It's every Irish American who's ever walked the earth who wants their heritage and history to be recorded and recalled. It's every kid who will learn about the Irish famine from your exhibit and the Great Hunger Museum. It's every kid who should have access, if they were a student, to the best and most comprehensive set of historical documents about the history of Irish America. But none of those groups showed nothing but complete arrogance with the way they went about it and just announced, you know, in the case of the American Irish, a full-page story in the Wall Street Journal talking about what a great building it was and how it would sell for $52
okay.
million.
Yeah.
That was not
just thrown out there. They absolutely had a number of offers, you know, to buy, and why wouldn't they? you know, the American Irish Historical Society, you know, on Fifth Avenue, directly across the street from the Metropolitan Museum of Art, I mean, that's a no-brainer. If you're talking about cashing in, yeah. But there are other aspects as well. And as you rightly say, next to none of those involved with managing and taking control of those institutions never were seen at United Irish counties, county organizations. You know, it seemed like had they an interest along the way, maybe they might have opened that, welcomed the Irish community, you know, into that circle. And you know, it's almost like, you know, who do we keep out here? We'll keep that other crowd. You know, they're only troublemakers anyway. Or they're insignificant, which is worse.
Yeah. Well, they treat the community very, very badly, and the appointment of the new president-elect or president-general of the American Irish is an example where they just put a guy in charge whose only claim to fame is that he's the son of the Irish president, who has never been seen at an Irish event that I know about, who has never been a part of the community in a meaningful way. And you just shake your head and say, you know, this is a level of arrogance that I didn't believe existed, but it has to be addressed. And I'm very glad to say it has been addressed. I'm a former board member myself, and I recruited a number of board members over the years, and every one of them had the very same problem, Adrian, which was their voices were not being listened to. There was just an arrogance and a hostility to any outside influence, just like what happened with the Famine Museum,
Yeah. Just
like what Cuomo tried to do to the Famine exhibit downtown. And this is what they do, these people. They just decide, no, we're not servants of this. We own this. You don't own it. The people own it.
Yeah. I just want to ask you as an aside, the immigration problems that we've had and America pretty much shut down to Irish immigrants, could that in some way affect the overall concern? And they're looking at it and say, well, sure, the Irish are, you know, what the hell, they're not, they have no voice now. The topic of immigration, which you've tackled on Irish Central, that being the dirtiest word in the U.S. History in terms of talk about shaking the red rag to the bull, that again puts us on the back burner. And when is that going to improve? It's not the way things are going.
No, I mean, you have to be realistic. I think it's very, very difficult to imagine any immigration reform in the current situation, given that Trump ran so successfully on anti-immigration. And, you know, you never forget the speech about Mexican rapists and all that. And that impacted deeply on people in a negative way. And suddenly immigrants went from being an issue that you could talk about and discuss to one that there was very high emotion saying, you know, we're not letting anyone else in. I think that's a generational issue. I think, you know, people will come back to it because obviously people are going to come here whether people want them or not.
Yeah.
And you have to deal with the issue. The same way you have to deal with the homeless, you have to deal with all these different crises. You just can't say, well, we'll throw our hat at it because nobody can solve it. And I think, you know, it goes back to the role of the Irish community. I mean, we've been very lucky in many ways with President Biden and before that with President Clinton and the number of things that have been achieved. And going back to our time, Adrian, doing the Morrison and Donnelly visas, there's been some big victories. But I think somewhere along the line we all said, well, all the big battles are over, and then you suddenly find out the big battles are only beginning with institutions like the American Irish and the Famine Museum.
Yeah, and also, Neil, the pandemic, unfortunately, you know, has taken the wind out of the sails of many, well, not just Irish, but Irish and Irish-American organizations who are now regrouping, who are now, have to look at important aspects such as this. And we're entering the season now to show an interest and to really get behind issues like we just discussed this morning, in taking our identity, in taking our heritage, and taking that to the fore during this season, I think is probably the best way back.
Yeah, I think it's a very good opportunity to focus on what's really happening in the community. I think, you know, you're going to see the parade back, you're going to see the stories come back. We all get a laugh out of the leprechaun stories and everything else, but there are some very serious issues facing the community, and I would honestly say that the closure of the Great Hunger Museum and the attempt to basically remove the American Irish Historical Society from its historical roots are the two big issues facing us this St. Patrick's Day. And
they're not going to go away.
We should be talking about.
And Neil, I think we could add to that, that if we don't do that now, when the focus for the entire month of March, and this being, March, the season of March, which is there, when are we going to do it? We're not better not wait on this one and bring these issues, to the fore now. Particularly since a lot of, again, not only are the organizations, but for instance, I see that Irish American Magazine is now, refocusing and having the first in-person top 100 honorees, after a couple of years. Like every other, or most other events, not in person.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great feeling, Adrian. It's like emerging from the dark into the light, and we're doing our first event. It's actually our Business 100 on March 15th this year, and just judging by the early numbers of people who want to come, I think there's a huge need out there for people to get out, and people feel very strongly that they're going to get out and mix and mingle and meet friends and go back to some kind of normal life. Because if I see another Zoom conference, I think I'll I think I'll just give up, because you cannot replace the human contact and the human touch.
I just want to point out. That again, with Irish American Magazine and you as co-founder, with editor-in-chief Trish Harty, that is you and Irish American Magazine really went such a long way in identifying the great number of those of Irish heritage who actually have an interest and who are sought out, into an area of exposure that nobody else bothered with.
No, I mean, I think that was the great achievement that we tried to achieve, which was to bring new people. And I go back to people like Don Keogh, the chairman of Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Who, when I met him in Atlanta, said, "I've been waiting all my life to go to Ireland and hear about Ireland." I think there's a need now to build a new generation of leaders. There's so much to do, Adrian, and these crises with the Historical Society, and they're typical of something deeper, which is that we've all taken our eye off the ball. The pandemic has been very damaging, obviously. And I think that what we're now starting to do is wake up and say, hang on a second, what's going on here? We've got to retrieve our sense of Irish heritage, and we've got to retrieve our history, and we've also got to function as a community much better than we have been through the pandemic.
Neil, I want to thank you, but also point out the tremendous input of course, you as a founder, as the founder of Irish Central and sister publication, you know, the Irish Voice newspaper, again with Editor-in-Chief Debbie McGoldrick, that again has been a lifeline, and you know, many others, but this has been a lifeline during a period where, you know, we were trapped. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, FaceTime and Zoom and all the rest of it. But this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity, you know, for us to hold on.
I'd like to see
Would you ever get closer to the phone? I know you're right. Thanks very much.
I think we both realize just how much was built up, and the tragedy of seeing things torn back down is almost too much for the community to take in. But I do believe that there's a younger community. I do believe the Irish Arts Centre is an example of what can be done, where a brand new building on the west side with huge plans has come forward. And this is what we need to do, is constantly renew our heritage and history.
Right, and in the process, not pit one organization against another. That coupled with what I think is the reality that organizations, traditionally Irish organizations, traditionally invite new membership as long as they, you know, sit down at the back of the hall and we'll show you how this is done. That has to change.
I agree. Fully agree. It has to be much more spread across the groups, the different Irish groups. As I said, I think the idea of if Quinnipiac had taken the time to sit down with the community, if the Historical Society had invited people in to sit down and talk about what could be done, all of this could have been avoided. But it's still a wake-up call, and I'm glad we're not still asleep, because it looked like at one point the Historical Society would be gone and the Famine Museum would be gone. Now I think the chances are improving that neither will go, and I just hope we continue on that road.
But we need to become involved, not wait to see the outcome. I think that's the secret. Neil?
Absolutely.
Neil, thank you for joining us and for bringing us up to
thank
date.
You,
so, okay.
Bye now.
Thanks. Okay, and friends, you are listening to the Flannelly Show live from New York. And again, we do by inviting guests on this program, try to not only just spout the news, but to actually make sure that you know, we you know, that we have a source of you know, involvement that is required, and I think Neil personifies that need. We're heading for Ireland to catch up with Kevin O'Connor and news from Ireland. In the meantime,